Everyone, and welcome to Playwright, a podcast about creating and sharing new ways to play. This is our audio game jam, where we come up with brand new, never before explored video game ideas. Every once in a while, we find out they've been previously explored. My name is Ryan Heyman. You can call me H.
And I'm Ryan Quintel. You can call me Q.
Actually, speaking of previously explored, I linked you to this a few weeks ago. There is a game on the Android store and presumably the iOS store that very closely mirrors one of our more recent pitches, actually. This is called Sling Drift, and it's, I don't want to say based off of, because they probably have never heard of us, but this game Sling Drift that I found just browsing on the App Store,
yes,
or the Google Play Store, rather, seems to be a racing game where you attach tethers to the sides of the track to sling yourself around corners, kind of like our recent game, I believe it's Overturn. Without going back and listening to the episode, I think that's the one from Playwright 40.
I think you're right. It's capital O, capital T on that one.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's kind of funny to see some of our ideas start to make it out there into the world. Now, of course, it's probably coincidence in this case, but if you are ever inspired to create anything that we talk about here on the show, then you are free to do so. You don't owe us royalties or anything. That's part of the game. People know that when they submit.
H knows he's alone in this. I want every penny that you can spare. I just need it for, honestly, at this point, I was going to say Amiibo, but the Amiibo scene has really quieted down, hasn't it?
Well, we got a new Smash Bros. On the way, so
presumably,
you see, best case scenario is we get Amiibo for like Ridley and the Squid Kids, and maybe Daisy, maybe some of the characters that change their look, like Zelda and Ganondorf. But worst case scenario is that we get a complete reissue with all the characters in their new key art poses.
Yes, and they will. Many of their faces will be slightly tweaked. speaking of games that remind me of Playwright pitches, I know what I was sharing a little bit more dramatic news last week, but this week there was a game at E3 that caught my eye. It's from Brigham Young University. At least that was the label above it, and it was called Beatboxers. Have you seen this thing?
Beatboxers, I don't think I have.
Okay, so I'm gonna have to send it to you. I took a video of it, and I don't know if it's like all over the internet for you to play, but it is essentially a fighting game where you are rewarded for executing the moves to a constant rhythm sort of track. So yeah, I looked at it, I said, that looks like a Playwright game. I gotta send this to Ryan. So I'm gonna do that before this episode's out.
Very cool. Well, kind of like a Def Jam Icon had a little bit of rhythmic quality to that fighting game as well. So yeah, that's it's neat territory. Well up for exploring that. But for right now, we have to get to some video game pitches. What I'm going to bring to us today is a strange idea. Have you ever played the game Jez Ball?
No.
Okay, I don't know if, you know how there's these kind of classic archetypical video games that you played a version of it growing up and that's the only name that you know it under, but you're sure that it's also widely available under a number of different names?
Yes, I learned this with Breakout. I never really understood.
Or Arkanoid.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Jez Ball is the name that I knew this one under, and basically the rules are, you're in this this big kind of rectangular grid, and there's these, it starts off just two balls bouncing around, and they just kind of, they move at a constant speed, and they bounce off the sides of the map, and just kind of bounce around the screen, and you move your cursor anywhere on the map, and when you click, it sends vertical or horizontal lines out, and as soon as they intersect with the sides of the map, then it cuts off the smaller portion of the map And now the balls are confined within a tighter space. But if the balls touch your line while it's drawing, then you lose a life. And so the point of the game is to isolate the balls or to get them in as tiny a space as possible without losing all of your lives. And usually there will be some par that you have to hit, some percentage of the map that you have to clear. So what I want to do is something similar. It's like Jez Ball, but you play as zookeepers trying to wrangle in stampeding animals. Maybe the different types of animals might have different types of behaviors. The thing is that unlike Jez Ball, where you click your mouse and then you watch the lions move and there's nothing you can do about it at that point if something doesn't go entirely as planned, you have control over both zookeepers individually, kind of like Nobi Nobi Boy, and they're holding like a net between them or something that they can use to establish a wall. But basically you flick the thumbsticks apart from one another and watch them run. And as soon as they hit a wall, then they're able to secure the net and close out that area. You know, they can wrap themselves around trees. They can interact with the environment in a little bit more subtle ways. And potentially there's also the added hazard of civilians at the zoo who are trying to get away from the animals and maybe trying to separate the animals and the civilians for a little bit of extra challenge. So this is an arcade trap 'em up where you play as a couple of zookeepers trying to wrangle some stampeding animals. And we'll start the clock.
Well, it happens every once in a while, but I feel like you did it. That's perfect. We don't I selfishly also would like to see this thing set in the Jurassic Park universe, as that apparently that most recent Jurassic Park game disappointed. So if we could have a
I've heard mixed opinions on that one. I've heard a lot of people say it's pretty good.
It's got Jeff Goldblum. It's got to be at least okay. What I think is interesting about this, especially if like it's particularly dangerous animals and the civilians could be, you know, eaten in some way, mm-hmm. it almost takes on a Housemarque sort of vibe.
Yeah, right.
In terms of its presentation style in my head. And I like the idea of animals being able to escape. Maybe you get things like abilities or powers where you can sort of tranquilize one of the larger animals or like control the horde a little bit as you're trying to do your work.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of these Jez Ball clones, I'll say that not knowing which version of that game is the original, they do have ways for you to like freeze time or to, I don't know, have temporary invincibility. So there are some power-ups. And so that's not entirely unforeseen in this genre.
Essentially for me, the big thing is how to rectify things that end up like outside of the space. Like, are you trying to build in, just get rid of as much of the map as possible? Or are you trying to like also successfully contain the correct amount of animals? I guess the answer is kind of both.
Yeah, I guess ideally, I mean, the simplest version of this is that you try to eliminate as much of the map as possible. But I guess it does make sense to have these side objectives, like trying to separate the different types of animals into their own enclosures. You know, there could really be these like really granular submissions on each level that would let, you know, masters really, really play to their level while not putting too much of an ask on newcomers.
Yeah, one of the things that could be interesting too is if, let's say, you know, as opposed to just being a mouse, there is some physical representation of you or the sort of herder in the space, potentially being able to set up things like temporary one-way gates. Stuff that kind of adds variety, like allows you passage to go and like clean up, a animal that might be in one section and needs to be in another, where like you can move them, but they can't move themselves.
And that's interesting. Now, I mentioned at the beginning that you would be playing both of the zookeepers, one on each thumbstick. And so that is an interesting twist that since you have that kind of freedom of movement, that permanence of character in the space, that maybe you could revisit a wall that you had previously built and amend it with almost kind of like tower defense type of stuff. You know, doors and maybe even tranquilizer turrets or, you know, something that could benefit your journey. There's not a lot of risk to doing that, though, because really, if these animals are just bouncing around, then by the wall is kind of the safest place to be to begin with. So how do we make that interesting? I want them to risk if they're going to receive something.
Yeah, maybe the depending on the size of the animal, like if you're physically in the space, you yourself can be trampled, right? Like I'm looking at gameplay now of Jez Ball, and I'm seeing the sort of thing that you don't want is for any of the balls to touch the line as it's being drawn, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's the worst case scenario.
So the idea of you being physically represented in this space and these animals posing a danger to you, you almost get, you know, I hesitate to call it this, but almost like an Asteroids-like game that's happening while the Jez Ball game kind of continues in the background. So the meta is actually the dodging and what have you.
Yeah. And then, of course, you have the net in between your two characters, and that is probably the most vulnerable space. So as much as you don't want to be trampled as individuals, you also don't want an animal to run between you. So you really have to plan out when you're going to separate. You know, it's kind of easy if you move both the thumbsticks kind of in parallel with one another, because, you know, it's easier to wrap your mind around than controlling two different people going in two different ways.
Right.
But that's when you're the most vulnerable. The farther you are apart, the more net that exists for animals to pull you along.
Because as you're closing off the space and dodging is part of it, then you're theoretically like decreasing the amount of space you have to stay clear as well. So maybe there's like, ultimately you need to not only like separate enough of the animals, but then separate yourself from the animals as well. Or leave yourself a path to the exit or something.
Yeah, I guess since you are drawing the line, it's a little arbitrary what side of the line you end up on, but maybe if it's like semi-permeable, or if you have to like bore a hole in it or something as like your final exit procedure. I mean, environmental hazards, that's something that we go back to fairly often, especially the spice up games that are rather simple in their construction, like chess last week. You know, if there are volcanoes or tar pits or something that you might want to herd certain animals into.
Or could you imagine, some of those things potentially drawing land or creating land in the case of the volcano, suddenly new routes being opened up and like, as opposed to a level being, you know, a 1 to 4 minute affair, it becomes, you know, a 10 to 20 minute affair.
It would be interesting if the landscape changes. And so everything that you've been drawing up until that point might be unsettled in an earthquake, or maybe, you know, just like in Overcooked, how you have a certain system in place and you have a certain plan to get you towards the end, but then a earthquake will come and kind of change the layout of everything. And so now you're right where you don't want to be.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, I'm obviously seeing very rudimentary Jez Ball being played here, but one of the things that's kind of true of Jez Ball is you are sort of always dealing with statically moving objects. I think once you add in different animals moving at different speeds and maybe posing different levels of threat to you or something to that effect, I think it's kind of interesting to consider what it would feel like once you're, you know, first you can wrangle the sheep, right? They're nice and slow. They're kind of easy to corral because you're going to have to be able to like maybe shout or something at the animals or do something, take an action to prompt them to move. Man, I'm just thinking that it could be really fun to stay away, or like almost in the way that Geometry Wars ends up being very interesting just by the virtue of the mix of enemies on screen. Then you get some animals that can call out and actually pull other animals towards them and stuff. You almost deal with that sort of gravity issue.
You can almost leverage the predatory food chain of animals against each other. So maybe if the gazelle are giving you a bunch of trouble, then you can kind of like herd them towards the lions or something like that.
Right. You start off with 10 gazelle, and like part of the puzzle is like, look, a couple of these need to get eaten for you to be able to actually section off the lions.
Yeah. And find ways to pacify these creatures in different environments. And it's interesting. We're out of time. Let us go into the naming phase. This took an interesting direction. I think I will to tie it into another weird game that is another one that we would have come up with had we had this podcast first, rather than the game coming out before we started our little venture, Tokyo Bungle.
Perfect.
All right, so what do you have for us today?
I have been playing a game called Yoku's Island Express.
Oh, excellent. I've been wanting to jump into that.
You're going to love it, because it, in a way, is also a Playwright game. But it's absolutely gorgeous, and it's wonderful. And for people that don't know, it's a mix of Metroidvania plus pinball, which I didn't think would ever be a thing. So it got me thinking, what other kind of classic games can you mash up with some modern mechanics? And I thought about essentially creating a roguelike or roguelite first-person shooter where you are incorporating elements of Tetris. So there's a giant tower that you're either ascending or descending, depending on how you're stacking these Tetris pieces. But in it is rooms, and you got to sort of clear rooms or make it through rooms to retrieve pieces, and then use a portal-esque gravity gun to successfully extract those pieces back out into the main hall and start building yourself some Tetris in order to access new levels of the tower.
All right, we'll start the clock. So this is interesting. Now, there is a game called the Talos Principle in which you are collecting Tetris pieces, but they don't actually do any of the Tetris stuff. And so, you know, you're not stepping on that. I just think that, you know, it's a first-person game by a renowned shooter studio, even though the game isn't a shooter itself, that as you're collecting Tetris pieces. I think it'd be interesting if you're climbing a tower, if the the pieces that are falling down, the tetromino, each with four different squares or cubes or whatever, if each of those four cubes are like room-sized shooter arenas that you have to clear.
Yeah, I agree.
So maybe you have, you're in the room, and as you rotate the piece to try to win the Tetris game, the entire room kind of shifts onto its side and throwing all of the monsters at the air. This could be some kind of like a Serious Sam thing where you're in an impossible position trying to fight off overwhelming odds, or there's like a mix of puzzle rooms or something.
That's what I think is interesting about it is, like, yeah, in my mind, it's like, can you imagine if a tetronimo was sort of one single cube of it was larger than your whole body, and how you would have to manage it potentially, or if you're going into these rooms that are each themselves, you know, just kind of well-designed first-person shooter threats, like you're taking that Half-Life gun or that portal gun and trying to like pick this thing up and throw it across the room. Maybe it's the tetronimo is like your only weapon and, you know, trying to push it around. I guess that's thinking of it on a different scale, but you would have to figure out some way to kind of move or get to these giant monolithic pieces.
The thing that I'm having trouble with in my head is thinking about how these two levels of the gameplay kind of interact with each other.
Yeah.
If you're playing Tetris and the falling pieces, but you're also inside the pieces, then how does that really work? Maybe you have some way of controlling the pieces from within them. And so on each of the walls, there's a point on the wall, and your main method of offense is like this, this whip or something, like an energy whip. And when you latch on to this spot on the wall, then it rotates the entire room. And you can also use that whip to, you know, grab onto monsters or throw them into lava pits or something. And so you're always kind of swinging this room around and moving it from place to place while trying not to fall into any of the hazards yourself. But it's a little non-aggressive in that you're not shooting bullets at them. You're just kind of using the gravity and the space around you against your enemies.
What if it's a kind of a run-based game in a little bit shorter of a loop, and it's kind of about getting into the tower, and there are just kind of giant tetronimos that are always falling and automatically stacking themselves, as if like a giant game of Tetris is being played and you're constantly platforming to stay above it as well as you're battling enemies up the tower.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. Yeah, let's say this is a, you know, I like this idea of the tetromino being room sized, and maybe instead of like four different cube rooms, if each of the different shapes like that, those all combine into one room to give you a little bit more like variety in the shape of rooms that you enter. And they're all falling, but you are confined to like walking on the walls. And so essentially it's like going sideways, but below you is lava. And so your objective is to always move upwards and always move away from the lava. And these giant Tetris block rooms are constantly falling down into the lava. And so basically a good run is just how long can you survive against these odds as things are trying to eat you and to slow you down and drag you back into the lava.
Yeah, I think that's kind of neat too. And if you take into the account while you're doing this sort of crazy platforming, if a Tetris happens and suddenly the floor falls out underneath you, kind of knowing where the pieces were underneath that or where the last like incomplete row is could give you some sort of like institutional advantage.
Yeah, especially if you had control over the Tetris Tower and where things landed. This could even be like a 3D space, kind of like a Jenga. And you have some level of control over where things go. And you kind of want to like lose the game in a way. You want to stack them really high so that you can get higher up rather than completing rows.
So get this. Now we take into, we bring on different types of enemies and potentially what enemy you kill will shift the blocks or rotate the blocks. So okay. If you have some sort of view of like, okay, well, we'll oversimplify, like bad guy green, you know, moves it left. I guess just bad guy left, bad guy right, and bad guy rotate, right? And then maybe even potentially a really big bad guy could be bad guy drop. And that would be cool too, because like if you're fighting, you know, an unmanageable amount of enemies and you can kill the drop guy, a big block will come and like crush the others. So now you're kind of managing, and of course, like you would way stretch out the time scale of how long it takes the Tetris piece to drop. You want like potentially minutes instead of seconds. But yeah, that's kind of cool. And, you know, you have to destroy enemies of a certain type and you're trying to read the landscape as to, you know, notice what shape piece is coming down and how it's going to fall.
That's interesting. The only thing that doesn't quite add up to me is you're trying to really like survive for your life. And if you are basically punished for killing certain enemies or for killing most of the enemies, if the core gameplay is playing Tetris and the shooter part is kind of ancillary, it feels like a reversal of what we want almost. Like you want the Tetris to be the long game and you want the shooting to be the immediate thing. You want that to feel tense and moment to moment, just surviving by the skin of your teeth, like in Doom or something. But maybe you have like a gun with a bunch of different modes and depending on which like sub weapon you use, so to kind of utilize the same idea, it can have these different effects on the entire room. So you have like a green laser, you have some red rockets, you've got a blue shotgun effect, and it shifts the room left, right, up, down, turning around, you know.
Yeah, if you design the whole room as almost like a cylinder of sorts and you put giant strips on either like side, one on the far left, one on the far right, and then you make it so that maybe what happens is those are just both generic switches that move the piece left and right, and you just have to kind of clear the wave for the switches to activate. So it's a race against the block falling, like, and creating that feeling of Tetris anxiety of like, okay, the block's falling, I gotta do something. To, I can't control the block until I do sort of the work down here on the ground. Or does that sort of, is that similarly betraying the feeling that you're looking for?
No, it's interesting. I mean, what does that look like? Like what is this switch? Is this are there actual controls that you have to like run to
either that, or maybe you could shoot them, you know, that way you could kind of like once the block is closing in, you get that effect of like, I don't know, every block, you know, has spikes all over something while it's falling. So you have that scary falling roof thing and you destroy all the enemies, and then sort of the two strips that travel. I imagine they have to travel up the entire cylinder because you don't know how high you're going to be. Right. So, you know, red strip, green strip, they both rotate or move the thing in different directions.
Definitely getting somewhere, but we're out of time on that one. What kind of name do you want to give this?
If we're going to do our typical puns, then maybe we could do like Tetron Fall or...
See, Tower of Guns is a good name, but that's already like the complete name of a game.
Tower of Guns is pretty good. Well, since maybe you want to... This is a little strange. Since you want to potentially climb higher and higher, maybe you call it Bad Tetris?
Bad Tetris? You see, Towerfall Ascension is a perfect name for what's happening here.
Tetris Ascension is a pretty good name.
Tetris Ascension, all right. Yeah, that's not bad. We have one pitch left today. All right, so we are currently all out of community pitches. This happens every once in a while. They come and they go. We would like to put another call out. If you have a brilliant or even a very silly and very bad video game idea bouncing around in your head, anything that you want to challenge us with, we will happily accept it and make it into a video game.
I am so nervous. Last time we did this, I panicked. So let's see if I can make it through this one.
So since we don't have a community pitch, what we're going to do instead is, just like before, we're going to open up a random page of a book and just see where that brings us. Last time we used the DSM-5, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual that psychologists use to diagnose mental illnesses. And today I have something very different. I have The Bride of the Far Side by Gary Larson. So,
okay. Oh boy.
Let's open up to a random Far Side comic and see where it takes us. Okay, so I'm going to describe the panel. We have the devil sitting in hell, of course, with fire all around him, sitting at a desk with another devil, a rather timid-looking devil, sitting across the desk in front of him, wearing spectacles. The devil boss is saying, "That's the third one you've lost this month, Edgar. You've got to stop believing these guys who say they're just stepping out to use the restroom."
Mm.
Okay, so we seem to have some sort of incompetent devil keeping hell, but not doing a very good job of it. Let's start the clock. I kind of like this idea of like a hell management simulator.
Yeah, it's funny because isn't there a game out or a game coming that is something about like the last party or something like that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. By the people who did Oxenfree.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's called After Party.
After Party. And you're supposed to outdrink the devil to get permission to leave hell. So I feel like this is either DLC for that or is set in that universe in a strange way.
For me, I always find comedy the funniest when the absurd is pushing really hard against something that really wants to take itself seriously. Mm-hmm. There was another hell-based game recently. Do you remember what it was called? It was starts with an A, like Agony or something like that.
Yes, this game. Yeah, Waypoint had a lot to say about this game.
Right. It's this like super edgelord, you know, like you know, look it up if you want.
Everything's
to.
Wet and bloody and on fire, and everybody's naked. It's just like it's exposition for the sake of it.
Yeah, and there's just like a tons of like tits everywhere and gore demons and stuff. So, you know, it's like for the proper 12-year-old.
Yeah.
But that's okay. 12-year-olds need something to play to. It would be interesting to have a comedic scenario set in like a scary hell.
Mm.
And just watching this intimidating by the looks of him devil being constantly undermined by the people that he's supposedly ruling over.
Yeah, one of my favorite... this is strange. I watched Thor Ragnarok on an airplane. And one of my favorite characters in Thor Ragnarok is Korg. Have you seen this film?
Yeah, which character was Korg again?
Korg is the giant rock guy that is voiced by, I think, Mark Metcalf himself. And he's just this sort of very crazy, strong-looking, tough guy who He's like, "Hi, I'm Doug," you know, like, or I'm Korg, and then he calls everybody Doug. It's a really endearing character in a very serious, like, life or death situation. So I like the idea of somebody who is very chill about that they're in hell and they're, like, helping people, like, get out of being admitted to hell.
Yeah, that's clever. Another one of my favorite depictions of hell is Rowan Atkinson's stand-up where he plays the devil, and he's just very pedantic and very sarcastic and very, like, over his job in a way that Rowan Atkinson does very well. It's a funny sketch. You should look it up. It's a good one. But I like this, hell as kind of like a middle management type of situation.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of people going in and out. So, like, the idea of...
Probably not out.
Well, that's true. Maybe, I don't know. I'd like to think maybe some people get promoted. I guess
by Catholic beliefs, I think you can earn your way out of hell. Or at least purgatorio, whatever.
Yeah, so the idea of, like, to that Rowan Atkinson bit, like, you know, the devil or somebody with a clipboard who's just kind of handling... Maybe this becomes like a papers, please... almost. And you're just sort of making very strange decisions and marking things off on forms.
I like this idea of this papers please type thing, but let's add a little bit of gameplay to it. I don't want this to just be text-based or speech-based, even though that might suit the game very well. I want something to do.
Maybe like the vision of hell from like the demon management sim almost looks like people in an ant farm. Or something, or it's like a Sims type of zoomed out view where, like, if you have enough people and they've got some level of artificial intelligence, like, it's easy to lose track of somebody, right? And then, like, clearly here in the comic, they're like, oh, you lost another one. Like, people can kind of escape your grasp through very sort of mundane means.
Yeah, now this could be, this could be like a management type thing where you have to manage the 8 circles of hell. Is that how many there were in Dante's Inferno?
Yeah.
And so you have to hire like middle managers. It could even be like a, why can't I remember the name of it now? The system that underlies Shadow of Mordor.
Oh, the Nemesis system. Yeah.
Where demons can be promoted and even the humans that you're captured, that you have captured and are torturing, they can be turned into demons and do horrible things. But all the time, you know, while these horrible things are happening and, you know, this is very grim, dark, bleak scenario, your devil character giving the voiceover and everything is very sarcastic, is very wry, is very, very unscary.
Yeah. Imagine if somehow the 8 circles of hell are flat. They're just like all locations among a giant hellscape. And, you actually move in the world a little bit like the Shadow of Mordor, sort of style, but you are not this badass, combat guy. You're just sort of a clerk. And you go and you have to constantly check on your bases, and you get there and whoever you put in charge is like, "Oh, we lost 3 of them." And then you got to go on an adventure and they're like throughout hell to like locate where these people have run off to, because like they can't, theoretically they can't escape hell. They just like wander off and can leave the enclave, and you got to like find them and capture them and bring them back.
Sounds a little bit tower defense-y. Sounds a little bit like a management type thing. I'm not quite sure it's interesting yet, though, gameplay wise. Like, I feel like we're almost there. I like this idea of kind of running around to check on these multiple bases of torture. It's almost like Dynasty Warriors in a way, where you are a lone warrior on the battlefield, but really the way that you win the game is by managing the flow of the battle. And there's all these different keeps and points of conflict all around the map. And you have to pay attention to the map to determine where you are needed to swing the tide of battle at that point in time.
Yeah, I think it's one of the things that is interesting to me is Okay, let's say you kind of go around from place to place and these people are wandering off, right? Is the game just like just rotating through these places, and that doesn't sound fun. So either there has to be some sort of additional mechanics layered on top of it. Like maybe you have some, like if it is Dynasty Warriors, like, and you can kind of manage a bunch of enemies or a bunch of opponents all at the same time, you're also in charge of like wrangling up new souls and like keeping each of the circles of hell stocked with fresh souls to keep them satisfied or for their labor pool where their birthing pits, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah, this could you could really take a lot from Brutal Legend in a way with its RTS segments where you have to go all around the map, you have to place these beacons that draw new souls into the battlefield to, that you can use as resources to fight battles against whoever. Maybe hell is being invaded by angels, or you know, it could be these different situations. Maybe sometimes it's very, you know, Dynasty Warriors like where you're fighting off these waves of angels as this kind of this powerful being, and then other times maybe it's more like Football Manager, or
yeah,
it's more like Overcooked, even where you're solving these kind of like puzzle scenarios all with the same controls. It's just, you know, what does the level demand of you in that particular point in time?
I like the when once you started bringing up the Shadow of Mordor stuff, it made a lot of sense to me too, because like I love the idea of there being amongst the like thousands of normal souls that moment where they kind of show you like a special orc and they zoom in and they should say its name and stuff. But like having that zoom in be like a dumpy guy with glasses and they're like, Gary. And you're like, oh, Gary is like a special extra bonus soul. And if you can get him deposited in X circle of hell, then that place gets some sort of defense bonus against the next angel attack.
It would be kind of neat if any of these like hapless humans down there could transform ultimately if you kind of shepherd them through the game into these like awesome heavy metal demons.
Yeah, or even more so, right? Like you're using all these like beleaguered souls to mm-hmm. aid you in battle, and almost like an RTS unit in some games, like once they themselves get enough experience, they kind of level up to being a little bit more human, and therefore they're more wily and less susceptible to your control, and you have to track them down and they become more difficult but more valuable to have.
Anyways, that's all the time that we have there. We got to get out of hell. Let's come up with a name for this one. I'm going to propose the name Demon Resources, or DR for short.
Okay, that's pretty good.
Or you could even do the devils in the details.
Devil, not Demon Resources better. You're the head of Demon Resources, right? That's the game.
Yeah, right. Head of DR. Anyways, that is Demon Resources given to us by Gary Larson. Oh, that's an interesting one. We will keep coming up with creative ways to do this for as long as we don't have video game pitches. This only happens every once in a while. We usually are well supplied, but you know, every once in a while it kind of gets away from us. We forget to ask. So this is us putting in a request. If you would like to give us a request for a video game pitch on a future episode, you can email us, playwrightcast@gmail.com. You can go to our website, playwrightcast.com/pitch, or you can tweet us at playwrightcast.
Yes, and special thank you to Protodome for the use of our theme song, Hello World, off the album Blue Noise. It's very good, and you should listen to it. You do every episode.
That's right. Yeah, you get a little bit at the beginning,
a little taste
at the end. And to take us out of the show today, I'm going to drop a miniature pitch. What I have is the very musical, fast-paced P. Diddy Racing.
Nice.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.